All the way back in the beginning of recorded history, there's been one thing that humans have excelled at, both in effectiveness and creativity, and that's been finding the cruelest and most innovative ways to hurt or kill one another.
And on our new show, we plan on covering all of it.
Hi, I'm Kevin.
And I'm Dan, and we host a podcast called Torture.
It's a show where we examine the most horrible things people have done to one another over the centuries and tell you about all the methods and devices that our ancestors were able to come up with, including the when, the where, and the people they were used on.
Yeah, we'll go way back. We're talking biblical times, ancient Rome, ancient Greece, ancient China, to cover things like crucifixion, Ling Chi, and the Brazen Bull.
Up to medieval Europe for everything like the choke pair, the guillotine, and the rack.
And the more modern days like solitary confinement, waterboarding, and electrocution.
But that's only a small part of the history of human cruelty, because to really cover the issue, we also have to talk about the people that implemented them and the events in which they were used.
Historical figures like Vlad the Impaler, Nero, and Pol Pot.
Groups, institutions, and cults like the Viet Cong, Shinrikyo, and the CIA.
Notable and historical events like the Japanese rape of Nanking, any one of the many inquisitions, and the story of Blanche Monnier.
And it wouldn't be a podcast about human cruelty if we didn't cover some of the most sadistic people to ever live. Processed serial killers like H.H. Holmes, Fred and Rosemary West, Robert Bordella, and of course, BTK. But the most important and controversial topic we will cover in depth and to great lengths, the vital discussion and observation of
the complete and utter difference between Irish and American foods.
We talk about it a lot.
A lot.
Like so fucking much. Every episode, somehow we just end up talking about, well, this is American food. Well, this is Irish food. I don't...
So much you think it's too much, but then you realize it's not quite enough.
Yeah, like, it's a little... Like, at this point, we could probably just rename the podcast The Difference Between Irish and American Food and a Little Bit of Torture.
Sure, if you do it as, like, an off-branch...
Yes.
Thing.
I don't understand. Anyways, we'll have new episodes every 2 weeks on Sundays.
So go find us on Twitter and Instagram at TorturePod. Email us at torturepod@gmail.com and like, follow, and subscribe.
And most importantly, listen to Torture, A History of Human Cruelty, starting June 26th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Crime Scene and Cupcakes is an independent podcast created in the Anchor app, funded mainly through advertising. The podcast often has coarse language and disturbing content. Please listen wisely. Hey guys, it's Marianne, Dog Mom Baker, true crime podcast maker, and I want to thank all of you guys for listening. We have really added to our podcast family recently. There are so many cool new podcasts out there, and we have really enjoyed listening to them. We are going to be sharing those podcasts with you in every one of our newer episodes, and we're going to have a new trailer for you in each and every one. For this episode, you have just heard the trailer for Torture, a podcast by Kevin Young and Dan Horrigan. As many of you know, I have my doctorate in forensic anthropology, so hearing these guys discuss the applications of torture through the ages and its implications through society is so fascinating. And it helps listening to a guy with an accent, I gotta tell you. So, for today's podcast, I wanted to share a little bit about how excited I have been that October is coming. I've been decorating the house for Halloween, getting my list together of all the Fright Fest channels, and heck, you guys know I have Tallgrass Film Festival coming up, which I'm attending next week, and it has a horror shorts day. So all of these indie short films, which I met David Spaltro through that, who has an excellent horror film that I can guarantee a lot of you may not have seen called Dark Exorcism. If you haven't seen it, you need to check it out. Catherine Cobb Ryan is the bomb. So for this festival, I even built this really cool horror-themed cupcake display. And we're going to have these horror-themed cupcakes that are going to be dark chocolate with absinthe. So it's going to be really awesome. We're doing that because Lloyd Kaufman is the honored Ad Astra Award attendee there. And I don't know if you know him, but he does the Toxic Avengers, and he's been a part of the movie Splinter. And he has this mascot, Toxie, so I'm so excited. So again, I am so excited for October. Then I came across Debbie Buell and an anniversary article written in 2015 in the Hutchison News by Kathy Hanks. She wrote about how much Debbie Buell hates October. It's a month that brings with it horrific memories of rape, murder, death, and loss. Loss of relationships she once had with her children and friends. Loss of who she used to be. Those things were taken away from her by a man named Danny Pickerel, who on October 11th, 1984, came into her parents' home with the intent to kill Debbie's parents and take Debbie into the woods. Because as he had told friends before this incident occurred, as he was buying camping supplies, if he couldn't have her, no one could. Now when Debbie, a divorced mother of a 3-year-old daughter, first met Pickerel, they were working at Collins Industries, where Buell, Pickerel, and Peggy Wilson, Debbie's mother, all worked together. Collins Industries is now a closed business. However, in the 80s, it was a busy and successful plant, responsible for building steel parts required for ambulances and school buses across the nation. And Pickerel and Buell's courtship moved quickly. Even though it was reported that her mother, Peggy, and her stepfather, Richard, known by some as Rich, were not fond of the relationship. Debbie often talked about how she found Pickerel's tough demeanor exciting as they went on motorcycle rides, and Pickerel, who had served in the Army, and friends said he was quick to settle arguments with his fist, but Peggy encouraged him to channel that side of his demeanor into a more constructive form by taking up boxing. Then Pickerel began staying at Debbie's home, where her daughter lived more and more. That's when the trouble started. Debbie began noticing that Pickerel started to bring things home from Collins Industries, things that he had stolen. Then she also found out Pickerel had a wife and children living in Salina, Kansas, just an hour away from Nickerson where they lived. When Debbie found all this information out, she ended things with Pickerel. Then she even turned him into the company for his thefts. Pickerel, however, was not going to fade quietly into the night. 6 days before the murder, Pickerel broke into Debbie's house and threatened and brutally raped her. After that incident, Debbie packed up her daughter and moved to what she thought was the safety of her mother and her stepfather's home. It was there that her stepfather, Richard Wilson, encouraged her to file a police report, which she did. She thought she was safe. I'm going to file a police report, and it's going to keep him away. But it didn't. Shortly after the police report was filed, Pickerel was then fired from Collins Industries. Then, 6 days later, on October 11th, Debbie and her daughter, who were asleep in a bedroom with twin beds, she was suddenly awakened when she could hear her stepfather, Rich, moaning. And her mother was coming out of the bedroom to find out what was wrong. And that's when she suddenly heard shots fired. She peeked out the door and saw Pickerel dressed in camouflage gear. She ran back to her bed, frightened for her life, and pretended to be sleeping when Pickerel entered the room. And at that moment, she thought, that's it. It's done. I'm over. And her soul just sank. She had told Hutchison News that her spirit has been gone ever since. When Pickerel came into the room, her daughter was sleeping in the next bed. So she tried to talk to him as nice as she could. He first told her that he had just killed her mom and her stepfather, and that she was next. He said he was going to make love to her one more time before he killed her. He kept the light off in the bedroom and a gun propped up under her daughter's jaw so she wouldn't move. And then he raped Buell. Afterwards, he kept telling her how much he loved her and that he just couldn't kill her. And at that moment is when she began planning how she would have to save her own life and her daughter's by cooperating with him. As the night went on, she tried to gain more and more of his trust. Pickerel told her to pack and that they were going to go to Colorado. As she was packing and trying to get ready to leave, she couldn't see her mother, and she believed that possibly, maybe Rich Wilson was still alive because she said she could hear him moaning. As they were leaving, she convinced Pickerel to leave Danielle at her father's house in Hutchison, which he finally agreed to. Then he fled with her in the Wilson's Ford pickup truck. And at that moment, Buell continued in survival mode. She remembers sleeping in a park the first night. He had lots of guns with him, and she didn't know which ones were loaded and which ones were not. Then they headed out, not west to Colorado, but to Leesville, Louisiana. Now, Pickerel was really familiar with that area because he had been stationed there while he was in the Army. So, he had first misled her by saying Colorado. Maybe he'd done that because he was afraid she might leave some clues. So, not quite sure why he told her Colorado at first. But meanwhile, back in Nickerson, Kansas, 56-year-old Peggy Wilson, Debbie's mother, had been able to make it out the front door of her home before collapsing on her porch. A neighbor had found her the next day, and remarkably, she was still alive. When Pickerel had left, he had bound her when he'd shot her. But luckily, she was able to get out of the bounds, and the gunshot wasn't fatal as Pickerel had thought. So she tried to make it out the front door. She was hoping she could get all the way out, but she only made it to the front porch before she collapsed. I'm not sure if she hadn't made it outside how long it would have been before they would have been found, and she may not have survived. When Reno County Sheriff's Office arrived at the home, they found Richard Wilson, 44 years old, and he had been bound in the bathroom. The coroner's report indicated he had been stabbed in the chest as well as shot. The Reno County deputies knew the Wilson home well because they had been called there for previous disturbances with Pickerel before. So after finding Peggy, they were all hands on deck. They had information from Pickerel's friends that he had bought the camping gear prior to the murder. So they had deputies out on ATVs combing the woods, and they called in the FBI. They even called in a psychic. Reno County Sheriff Jim Fountain had stated in one interview, "We cannot just sit here waiting for something to happen." So they began searching one riverbank for 6 hours because they had some thoughts that maybe he was there. At this time, they weren't quite sure if Debbie and her daughter were still alive or dead. They didn't know if she was complicit with Pickerel or if she had been kidnapped. But signs had pointed she had not gone willingly. So eventually they figured out that Debbie had convinced Pickerel to leave Danielle, her daughter, at her father's house in Hutchison. So during this dilemma and everything that's going on, Buell is saying that she was like, "I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep, I'm scared to death. I thought any second, anything I did, I would be dead." And it just continued like this while they headed to Leesville, Louisiana. And it was at an area in Leesville that Pickerel was really familiar with because it was nearby Fort Polk. Because Pickerel had been stationed with the Army when it was about 1981 through 82, Pickerel had been with the Army. So he wanted to be around the Fort Polk area where he felt really comfortable. Now, on October 18th, their truck got stuck, and they walked to a side of a road where several soldiers from Fort Polk had picked them up. And Pickerel told the soldiers that they were on their honeymoon, and their truck was stuck, and his wallet had been stolen. So they spent a week and a half living in the trailer house of the soldiers. All the while, he never let her out of his sight, even to use the bathroom. And he carried a .22 caliber semi-automatic pistol. One night, the group went out to a bar, and Pickerel, after drinking quite a bit, he started to let his guard down, and he left Buell's side to go to the bathroom. And that's when she finally found the courage to speak out. And she told the people she was with, she said, "I'm a kidnap victim from Nickerson, Kansas. He is not my husband. He stabbed my dad and shot my mother. You have to call the Hutchison police." And she said at first they looked at her like she was just crazy. But they did report it to law enforcement. It took about a day and a half, and they finally formulated a plan. And this plan was to separate the two and trap Pickerel. So the soldiers are working with Buell to try to get Pickerel and her separated, but they've got to be careful. He's got guns, and he's not quite stable. So they devise a plan. "Hey, you know, it's time we get your truck out of the mud. So let's work together, and why don't you get the truck, and we're going to take Debbie, and we're going to get the Jeep, and we're going to winch the truck out of there." So Pickerel decides, okay, you know, we've been with these guys a week and a half. We've been drinking. Debbie's gone along. She's been a good girl. I left to go to the bathroom, and she's still here. So we'll go with it. So Debbie walks down the road to go meet them with the Jeep, and Pickerel stays with the truck, waiting. And as she's walking away, a dozen parish sheriff deputies and state police were waiting to get Debbie to safety. And when she's safe, they made their way up the muddy easement and took Pickerel into custody. Now, they were able to take him into custody without incident. At the same time, the police came and took her into custody as well, because again, they're not quite sure what the hell has been happening. And she was flown back to Hutchison, and accompanied by the Kansas Bureau of Investigation agent on October 26th. It was then that she learned her stepfather had died from his injuries, but her mother survived. Pickerel was soon found guilty of murder, attempted murder, kidnapping, and robbery because he had robbed a home while he was in Louisiana. But for Debbie Buell, her story did not end there. Along with PTSD, Buell has a shopping list of afflictions, including panic attacks, severe depression, agoraphobia, survivor's guilt, insomnia, and anger. Plus, she has guilt for what she believes she has put so many families through. She had told the Hutchison paper that it never leaves. And when they interviewed her, they noticed that she jumped at the slightest noise. She was always watching the road from her window. This was 31 years later. Debbie was now 57. Now, over the decades, Debbie had been hospitalized following several suicide attempts. She had even said she liked being locked up in the mental wards because they made her feel safe. Now, those were her words. She said she felt safe there and that there were no magic pills for the pain in her head. Once Pickerel was sent to prison, Debbie tried to return to work at Collins Industries, but alcoholism took over weeks after the day she returned from the kidnapping. It was the only thing that helped her fake a happy life. She said it got her through everything. It helped her sleep. It helped her raise her kids. But it most certainly did not help her four marriages. In the past 30 years, she said that there has only been one good man in her life, and that man was Rick Bassett, one of the soldiers in Louisiana who had helped rescue her from Pickerel. He was a real man, she said. I loved him. He was my savior. She said that when she had returned to Kansas, she found the cologne he had used and sprayed her pillow at night because that made her feel safe and secure. After the trial, he even bought her an airplane ticket to come visit him at the base he was stationed at in New York. But sadly, their relationship never went any further. Now, Judge Tim Chambers, he remembers 1984. As a really, really rough year in Reno County. He had been an attorney 6 years. And in Reno County, 1 year, a series of seven people were murdered from 1984 to early 1985. On January 30th, 1985, four Reno County prosecutors were each handling at least one murder case. Chambers had two cases involving charges of first-degree murder. Pickering was charged with first-degree murder for the October 11th, 1984 murder of Wilson, along with eight other crimes. Later that month, on October 29th, Rubke Jr. was charged with first-degree murders and aggravated kidnapping of 2-year-old rural Arlington twins James and Andrew Vogelsang and their 18-year-old Arlington babysitter Tammy Mooney. The Rubke case is the most notorious, Chambers had said, and we will be covering the Rubke case in one of our other podcasts. When Pickerel was sentenced, Chambers indicated that he would do everything in his power to object to his being released from prison. On June 25th, or any other time he would have a parole hearing. He has kept his word. Pickerill was denied parole in 2015 and 2017. He will not be eligible again until 2024. On most days, Debbie snuggles with her only faithful companion in her life right now, and that's Ziggy, her little dog. Ziggy brings a smile to her face. "Over the years, I've lost all of my friends," she had said. "They've dropped like flies." She believes it's in part because they are tired of her repeatedly talking about the tragedy, but also tired of her alcoholism. It's affected her relationships with her family, her daughter Danielle, who has grown up and is carrying on well with her life. Debbie also had a son from another marriage, but she says she has no relationship with either of her children or her grandchildren because of her battle with alcohol. She's attending treatment. She's also attending AA meetings. She said there has been a lot of three steps forward and two steps back. And sometimes she feels like she is being punished for what happened that night. She said it's like a ripple effect. She knows a wide circle of people were hurt. She cries for what happened to herself, her mother, her stepfather, and her stepfather's daughters. "I have cried many nights for them, and I know no apology for their loss will ever touch the pain of losing their father so painfully and so suddenly. They are always in my heart and in my prayers." "It's like he killed me, even though he allowed me to live." However, she knows thinking like that really is no way to live. And now, compounding the dread of the month, is also the loss of Debbie's mother. Peggy Wilson died October 9th, 2011. Now, Debbie often talks about wanting to start a support group for those suffering from PTSD. "I was a victim," she said. "But now, even though October is bringing back all of these horrible memories, I am trying to become a survivor." Now, normally, this is where we would sign off, but we've had a rare chance. The chance to hear from the person who committed these crimes. So we're going to take a moment and we're going to hear his side of the story. Because when the Hutchison newspaper ran the 30-year anniversary of the murder, and Pickerill wrote a letter to the newspaper. Here is the letter Pickerill wrote. "There is no defense, only remorse and sorrow for the pain I have caused so many. I dare not ask forgiveness, although I hope and pray for it, but I do wish to express how sorry I am for my actions, that I have hurt and wounded so many. I know I did it," Pickerill had said months later, sitting in a common area on a recent spring morning at Lansing Correctional Facility. "I take the blame." Now, he tries to rationalize his feelings, and he does say, "I should have thought my way out." He said it wasn't rage the night of October 11th, 1984. He described it was more like a pot of water slowly reaching a boiling point. He said that night when he entered the Nickerson home where Richard Wilson lived with his wife, Peggy. Peggy's daughter, 26-year-old Debbie Buell, was staying in the home with her 3-year-old daughter, Danielle, He says that Debbie had dated him, but had recently ended the relationship after discovering he already had a wife and children. He admits Debbie was at the house because she was frightened of him. He says he entered the house in camo clothes and he had picked up a hunting knife. He admits, "I stabbed Rich and shot Peggy." But he says, "I don't think I wanted to kill them." He says part of me was good and another part was bad. Again, Peggy survived. Pickerel entered Buell's room. He then kidnapped Debbie and her daughter. After stealing Wilson's truck and dropping Danielle off at her father's house, Pickerel had brought along several weapons. Pickerel only says, "I was in the zone, but I didn't have the courage to commit suicide." More than anything, he says, he wished he had walked away. For 3 decades, he has thought about that night. "I have worked diligently to get at the root of what caused my crime. I know the ripple effect of my actions. Deb was a victim. Rich Wilson and his family were victims. And my children were victims." Inmates at Lansing Correctional Facility, Pickerel is considered an old-timer. "I'm one of the old G's," he replies. "Old geezers." Now, Pickerel is one of 4 brothers who are all in prison except one, and he's on parole. They were all adopted by their great aunt and uncle, Roy and Velma Pickerel. In his family, Pickerel said seeking mental health counseling wasn't encouraged. "If there was a problem, you just swallowed and hoped it got down deeper inside." He said, "I was so selfish and self-centered. My actions were so me, me, me." Pickerel said if he stayed home with his wife instead of going off with Debbie Buell, none of it would have happened. Now, as I stated earlier, Pickerel has been denied parole both times he has been up for it. Adam Fanastil, communications director for the Kansas Department of Corrections, says parole was denied because of the violent nature of the crimes. Now, Pickerel did leave some things out of his side of the story. He didn't talk about the rape of Debbie. He didn't talk about the use of the guns at all. Also, didn't talk about while in Leavenworth in 1988, Pickerel had an added sentence of aggravated escape from custody. Also, while in prison at Lansing Correctional, he has had the following disciplinary actions. 2001, disruptive behavior. 2003, undue familiarity. 2010, undue familiarity. Now, undue familiarity is when an inmate and a correctional officer generally engage in sexual contact. So as many of us prepare for October and enjoy the spooky season and horror movies and everything that comes with it, let's take a moment and remember, some evil isn't just make-believe. They reside in our local prison and have ruined the season and lives of the victims that they have left behind.
Find us on our Instagram and Twitter, where we'll be sharing pictures and information about this case. And also, in case you hadn't seen on our Twitter and our Instagram, Krista Martin's case is now one of the cases that is on the website Uncovered, where it gives a chance for seasoned individuals to be able to research and put their theories out there about Krista Martin's crime. Also, the Wichita Police Department has a website for unsolved cases. They also have 2 detectives that are now assigned to the unsolved cases. That information is on our Instagram. We are incredibly excited to see that. Krista Martin's case is on there. So it's extremely exciting to see and be able to see other unsolved crimes. And we will be sharing those crimes with you and seeing what we can do to raise awareness on those crimes as well. Again, if you have any information on any unsolved crimes that have happened in the Wichita or Sedgwick County area, also you can go to the Sedgwick County website, which we will provide on our Instagram as well. Go to either one of those. We'll also be providing those links on our podcast as well. So you can go to those, look at the unsolved crimes, and if you have any information, please do not hesitate. Whatever information you have, big or small, can make a difference. Look for us next week and we'll have a new podcast. Thanks a lot. Stay safe.